I'm Pastor Emily, and my pronouns are they, them, theirs.
And I'm Pastor Kay, and my pronouns are she, her.
And we are Nerds at Church, a queer feminist podcast diving deep into faith, nerdery, and the Bible.
In our fourth season, we're diving deep into the season of Epiphany, including stars, astronomy, and all things magic.
Whether you're a Trekkie or a bookworm, a comics fan or a science nerd,
or even a historical costumer or artist,
we've got connections for you.
And Emily still has thoughts on Lembas bread.
If you've ever wondered what gifts Muppet Magi would bring, or how they'd name constellations, we've got the perfect segment for you.
Nerds at Church releases Wednesday mornings on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you catch your podcasts. If you love the weekly scripture readings, also known as the lectionary, our previous episodes are going up on YouTube, too, so you can find us there for past and current episodes, and they all have captions.
As the ancient Christian said,
Pax Vobiscum.
Greetings, Earthlings. You are listening to Horror Nerds at Church, as I'm dropping stuff on the floor, a ridiculously queer podcast where we take a deep dive into a horror film and talk about how it connects to queerness, religion, and theology. My name is Pace Warfield, and I am the bull dyke haircut that Ripley wears because I, too, am a bull dyke lesbian.
And I'm Pastor Emily, and I am Leonard Dillon's Malcolm X glasses. Yes, Pace had to tell me the character's actual name.
And I'm May, and I'm the last surviving prisoner left on Fury.
Fine. What a great time that is for you alone.
It's not! It's bad. It's a bad time.
Welcome. For those of you listening, you can follow us on Patreon at patreon.com/horrornerdsatchurch. Starting at only $5 to sign up, you get exclusive access to hours of bonus content, including BooTube episodes about TV shows, movie commentaries, bonus episodes, and more.
Fancy. Mm-hmm. Well, as you can tell, we have an amazing special guest with us. Would you mind introducing yourself to the audience, the masses of people listening to our podcast?
Hello, internet. My name is May Forrest Barnes. I am a trans femme genderqueer PhD candidate in theology and ethics at Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley. My focus is in disability ethics and the church, but I have also done extensive research into science, bioethics, medical ethics, technology ethics as well. I have a broad spectrum of interests. I am a former United Methodist pastor, current Episcopalian laity. I love theology. I love horror. I love films. I love comic books. I love video games. I love all kinds of pop culture kitsch and nonsense. Everything that is fit to critique, I am a fan.
Love it.
Awesome.
You're right at home here on Nerds
at Church. I do my best. I have an English degree for my bachelor's as well, so like culture criticism comes naturally to me.
Love it.
Perfect. That's, I have a women in gender studies.
Hell yeah.
That was one of my majors in undergrad, and yeah, that's like,
hell yeah.
What'd you do?
We need more. Need more of those. English lit! Woo! Getting lit. Do kids say lit anymore? They don't.
They don't.
That's okay. We've never been that cool anyway.
I've never been cool. Fun fact. So the coolest I was ever, if there was a metric for when I was at my coolest, it was when I was in seminary doing my master's degree. It was, I was surrounded by nerds, and apparently that kind of translated into people thinking I'm cool. Don't know how that happened, but it did. And you know what? I'm okay with it.
Right. At a certain point, you're just like, I'll just let you keep believing that. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Might as well.
I'm not going to challenge that notion.
Yeah.
Before we get into our lovely movie, first of all, how has everyone been? What y'all been up to?
Doctor Who.
No. Yeah. Lots of Doctor Who.
So much Doctor Who. There's nothing wrong with that. Everybody loves, I mean, most people. I was going to say lots of people like Doctor Who, but I'm honestly not sure if that's true anymore. It was very popular about a decade ago, and then, like, I don't know, I think, is it still super popular?
I feel like it's still popular.
Okay.
Yeah. I want to say yes.
Let's go with yes. Let's go
now
with
that
yes.
It's on Disney Plus, I feel like it's more popular than ever.
Yeah. You know what? That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. I also, like, they're actually, like, bringing it into, you know, the 20th century. In terms
we're in the 21st
of, like,
century, dear.
The characters and the diversity. I know. actually, I think the holiday specials actually this year maybe brought it into the 21st century, but they're finally, like, catching up that the Doctor mm-hmm. doesn't have to be, like, a cis white guy or a bi white guy. Yeah. So yeah. I feel like it's, like, making another comeback.
It is. Yeah, I'm all for it. I need to catch up. I'm woefully behind. Last time I checked, it was the last season I watched was the one with Bill Potts. Which I tragic ending to that
yes.
season. So I have several seasons to catch up on. Yep. But personally, I've been getting into The Expanse, which is really fun.
I
finished
the
first season
about
a couple weeks ago, and I'm working on trying to get back into the second season, and it's just real fun. Hey, space capitalism kind of sucks, huh?
I love it.
That's yeah, about as
kind
as
of like
succinct...
this movie.
Kind of like this movie. Yeah.
Space capitalism
doesn't work. Earth capitalism mm-hmm. doesn't work either, but you know.
It's almost
right?
like capitalism doesn't work.
It just it's
what?
Inherently
no,
flawed.
That's not true. What are you talking about? Capitalism's the best. Come on, no.
Yeah. Also, I've been watching a bunch of, like, documentaries and stuff. So we watched like The Genius season 4, which kind of goes through. It's in they're releasing throughout February, but it goes through Malcolm and Martin and, like, the ways that their stories cross and don't cross and who killed Malcolm X and doing a deep dive because it's February and
yeah,
why not go yeah. for it?
Yeah, it's been really interesting because I know a lot more about MLK than I do about Malcolm X, and so
same,
not by accident, of course, too.
Yeah, I mean, I did take an entire class on the theology of Martin Luther King Jr. in seminary, so.
Well, also I was just saying because there's a design in our American education system
yes.
to preference one over the other.
It's true.
What have I been watching? Of course, Doctor Who. Like we know, I want Doctor Who in a year. But I feel like I've been watching something else lately. A lot of murder shows. I don't know. I'm still on that true crime kick.
Valid. I feel like you are.
Very valid.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of true crime kicks, and I thought it was, like, a couple years ago, but I was a true crime, like, when I was in school and would be sick and stay home, it was, like, The Price is Right, Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman, and Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, I feel like I was raised on, what was that show called? The one that William Shatner hosted back in the early 90s, late 80s. I think it was called Rescue 911 or Emergency 911 or something. That was like what I was raised on. Rescue 911? Yeah. Oh my God. That show would give me nightmares and I was obsessed at the age of 7. But beyond that, I've been...
There's a theme here.
Yeah, right? It's almost like... Pace is addicted to horror movies. That actually, I was talking. I just started a job at a church doing youth ministry stuff, and I was talking with the Right. Mm-hmm. Yay. And we were talking about what kind of movies we like and stuff like that. And of course, horror always comes up for me. And the pastor there was, her name's Pastor Ashley. She was like, so what movie though, Pace, do you put on when you're like stressed and you just want like a comfort movie? And I was like, Friday the 13th, of course.
Obviously.
And everyone was like, what? And I'm like, it's my comfort movie. Mm-hmm. Everyone needs a good comfort slasher.
God, what's my comfort movie? Sorry, May Moana. EXE just stalled out for a second. I'm sorry.
that happens.
I don't really have a comfort movie aside from like the Star Wars movies, and I'll just pop those in. And I recently watched all three prequels, and I was like, all right, yeah, this George had something going on, but Lord knows what it was.
Right. Here's some behind the scenes trivia for you all listening at home.
Oops.
It was actually the Star Wars prequel movies that first had me think, oh, May should be on the podcast, because you posted on Facebook about that.
I did. Oh my gosh, I posted my hot take that I don't like Qui-Gon.
And so me, as a big Qui-Gon lover, I'm more of an Obi-Wan lover, to be clear, but like I love Qui-Gon too.
Okay, I had to go in and comment.
Well, that's what I believe in asking people what they want to cover. And so I gave them the options, or gave May the options, and she picked this one.
I chose Alien.
Which we can talk about.
I have many hot takes for Star Wars. I'll just throw in my two cents about Qui-Gon Jinn, because why not?
Please do. Go for it.
I can't wait.
Risked the entire fate of a planet on gambling on racing on an 8-year-old who somehow built his own race car? All of these are very questionable decisions, right? Oh, and he tried to to swindle a guy out of two slaves, a ship, and trying to save an entire planet. And then they got sidetracked on Coruscant for a minute because they tried to talk to the Senate. Senate didn't work. And then they come back. He comes back to Naboo. He puts an 8-year-old in the cockpit of an active fighter jet, leaves him to go do a sword fight, and the 8-year-old goes up and destroys a $1 billion space installation. Does that sound like the work of a good man?
I mean, it reminds me, though, of what I think it was Jenny Crean, who was on for our first Star Wars A New Hope, said of when Luke was like, this is just like with the swamp rats back on Tatooine, when he's getting in the thing. And she was like, it's like people who know how to drive a Ferrari thinking
they can fly a fighter jet.
They can fly a fighter jet.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. And then 8-year-olds. Even more
but it's
so.
The Force. It works in
the
all sorts
force
of mysterious
does work
ways.
In mysterious ways, and
through midichlorians, apparently
it does something.
Weird eugenics going on too. That's fun.
Oh my goodness. There's some. Right now in our Star Wars watch through for the podcast, we this one comes out right after Return of the Jedi. So the very next movies we're going to get into are the prequels after this. I'm so excited.
You guys are going to have fun. I promise. It's going to be great.
So,
but I chose to do Alien 3, so I guess we should probably talk a bit about Alien 3. Isn't that, that's kind of
a little bit, right?
I mean, I guess.
Right? But before we do, we asked this question of all of our guests. It's kind of become our trademark question, which is, do you have a real life church horror story? It can be something supernatural. We've had exorcisms and demon possessions, or it could, as is most often the case, just church people being really shitty.
I have a lot of experience.
However you interpret it.
I have a lot of experience of shitty church people. I mean, I don't know if I have any ghost stories or paranormal experiences. The most paranormal experience I had was a very long and uncomfortable conversation I had with a charismatic preacher who came to my front door because I had recently moved in to the parsonage in this little town. And he came to the front door and he rambled on for about an hour about demons and spirits, and it was obviously I was just going and I'm like, I want why is this man at my house? So I somehow escaped unscathed, but that was a very awkward conversation, but nothing entirely supernatural. The most horrific thing I experienced, and I say this to a lot of people, you probably haven't heard about it, it's fine, I'll tell you guys. So I am disabled. I have fibromyalgia, which is a chronic illness which causes a lot of chronic pain and chronic fatigue. So I was open about that with my superintendent at the time, which is functionally a bishop, like if you're a Lutheran, it's a bishop, or Catholic bishop kind of thing. We call him superintendents in the Methodist Church. I was open about it. I said, look, I'm disabled. I have this diagnosis. I'd like to have some accommodation. And he told me probably the most terrifying words I've ever heard in my life. He said, the church is not here to accommodate you. You are here to accommodate the church.
Which is how the Methodist Church treats pastors.
Yes. And so I basically shot myself in the foot, and that's why I'm not a pastor anymore. You know, it's fine. I'm happier not being a pastor anyways. Let's be real here.
I mean, depending on when you did it, also, like, the...
I was egg. I was very egg at the time, and I came out much later. So, yeah. So, yeah, it just wasn't gonna work. I'm much happier as laity. Let's be real.
Yeah.
As a laity. Yeah. But theologically educated laity.
Mm-hmm. That's probably the most terrifying words
to a pastor.
I love it.
Yes.
If I were your pastor, I'd be like, all right.
Your church horror story is giving me vivid flashbacks of the job I just left for a very similar reason. I had a disability. I brought a disability to them for accommodation, and they told me that this job is not a good fit for me. And so they made my life a living hell until I left.
I'm so sorry.
It's too much of that in the church, right?
This happens a lot.
It is.
Yeah.
Yay.
And that's sort of why I'm writing my dissertation. I'm folding that into work on my dissertation, and that's what it is. So,
yeah.
Horror begets transcendence. Why not?
And I hope it becomes a published book that we can buy.
If not, I can send you guys the documents. I'll send you the
manuscript.
That would
be lovely.
Did you defend already? I feel like you defended already.
I sent it into my advisor. He's looking over it, giving me notes, so I'm in revision stages right now.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Nice. Cool. I believe I started there after you. I started there before you at the GTU, and I am still in the writing / kind of revising stage.
Extremely valid.
I'm going to finish it this year, by God.
Same.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah,
we're gonna get this done. We're gonna be doctors, and it's gonna be great.
Right, Dr. Pace, Dr. May. I love it.
Yep.
Well, I guess we can get into the movie for real now. We are covering Alien Cubed or Alien 3, three times the terror, as the poster said, which is not actually cubed. That would
be nine times.
Yeah, nine times the terror, but anyway. Directed by David Fincher, mostly, we'll get to that behind the scenes. And it came out in 1992. Yay!
Woo! Mm-hmm. I was five.
I was seven.
Realistically, probably five, but I'm going to say six because 1986 was my year.
Hell yeah.
It was just a late in the year, baby.
So, if you want to feel old, as I probably will, as I read these are the other movies, big movies that came out in 1992.
That was the point where I was like, oh.
Aladdin, The Bodyguard, Home Alone 2, Sister Act, Wayne's World, Basic Instinct, My Cousin Vinny, Newsies, I'm only including that because it's Brian's favorite movie all time, Brian's my partner, A League of Their Own, only including that because it is one of Emily's housemate's top 10 movies, Three Ninjas, also one of Brian's favorite, The Mighty Ducks, The Muppet Christmas Carol, which is a Nerds at Church movie commentary, and the absolutely bonkers movie, which we will cover in this podcast one day, Toys with Robin Williams. Such a bizarre movie.
I've seen bits
of
that.
We could do a whole Robin Williams series. That would be fun.
And then in the horror world of 1992, we had Batman Returns, which we cover in season two. If you don't agree that's a horror movie, listen to that episode.
Oh, it's a horror movie. It's a horror movie. With Batman showing up occasionally.
Right? Bram Stoker's Dracula, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, Stepfather 3, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which we have a movie commentary episode on, the movie, talking about, to be clear, Death Becomes Her, which we need to cover, Pet Sematary 2, Blade Runner Director's Cut, which is directed by the same dude who directed the first Alien, and yeah, I know I have a million fans screaming at me that I just said the same dude and dismiss it. Yes, Ridley Scott. And then Innocent Blood and Candyman, the original, which we have a movie commentary on as well.
Everything is back to being right with the world. I have seen significantly more of the non-horror movies than the horror ones.
You haven't even seen the movie of Buffy, have
it's
you?
It's true. I have not.
Even though you did an entire watch through of the series, but you still haven't seen the movie.
I technically haven't finished the series.
Oh, okay.
I watched through the first five seasons and I stopped. And I know I probably should finish that eventually, but
no shoulds.
We're doing
that.
You don't have to. We're doing Buffy, Angel side by like. There's a watch list that's like a concurrent, but we got kind of derailed, and so every once in a while we come back and we're like, okay, are we on a Buffy or an Angel or? But yeah. We're closing in. We've got like one season left of Buffy and however many of Angel.
Oh, I put this whole section in the wrong section. Let me
oops. Do
that. So, what was your first time watching this movie?
When? Oh, God. Oh, that had to have been... God, that was a while ago. Had to have been in college. And I was a... I was a fan. I heard like lots of people were like, oh no, the third one's garbage, don't watch it. And I was like, it's not as bad as it's not garbage. It's not garbage. It's a solid B.
Agreed.
If the other two are A's, this one's a strong B. You know? Needs a little work, but it's fine. It's a fine movie. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you said fine one too many times for me to truly believe you, but
it's fine.
What about you, Emily? Do we get a drink? Is this the first time
absolutely.
You've seen it?
Absolutely. It's all around. The first time I watched this movie was for this episode.
Hot dang.
Yay.
God, watching this for the first time in 2024 has got to be bonkers.
Yeah.
I watch this. Yeah. I watched this for the first time in the same movie marathon I talked about in the last one on a rainy day at my dad's house. My parents were divorced, so I was at his house for the weekend. It was a rainy Saturday, and I think the Alien franchise, there were four films at that point. This was when I was in middle school, so the fourth one had just come out shortly. They were doing like a marathon of them on TNT or something, so we just watched them all, commercials and all the cuts that they used to do for network television of these movies, and replacing shit with like darn with really bad dubs and stuff like that. but yeah, so that was the first time I saw this.
So another shot.
Oh yeah, I was probably around 12.
The age of 12.
I was probably around 12
when
I saw it.
I have not seen it except for this podcast. Everybody gets to see a shot.
Yep.
Because that's usually the pattern.
So, I have a lot of behind the scenes for this one, but that's okay.
Yeah, you do.
It'll just mean the next one's a little shorter because we're going to talk about all the behind the scenes in this one. So, anyway, this movie, as May alluded to, is considered by many not to be a very good movie, especially not in the franchise. And so we're going to talk about the studio versus David Fincher disagreement, because I think that's a popular reason many people point to. But also, even before he was involved, before David Fincher was involved, this movie was in development hell with over $1 million budget by the time David Fincher got to the production, because it had been through so many different directors and rewrites and treatments and stuff like that. Eventually the studio just announced it's going to come out in 1992, and this was like in 1990, and they still didn't have a script or a director and stuff, but they made that the release date, and they're like, we're going through it, come hell or high water. Rennie Harlan was one of the biggest names brought in during this time, and he initially was going to direct it. We know him from our Nightmare on Elm Street series, but he also directed Die Hard 2. And then the early thoughts in this long development hell was to not have Ripley return, but instead have a male action hero, in part because they weren't sure if Sigourney was going to return. She's kind of wishy-washy about it, as she was also for Aliens. But after they set 1992 as the date, it was still in development hell and still going through different creative teams. But they finally decided to just hire on a director. They hired on David Fincher. But before they got there, these are some of the ideas that they had tossed around for the movie. And all these would have been kind of cool movies, I think. So one of them is to have a Cold War analogy. I'm not quite sure how that would have worked. The aliens coming to Earth was another idea, which would be cool, like an invasion of Earth. Continuing the story with Captain Hicks, who is played by Michael Bayne in the last one, and Ripley either as a team-up or just Captain Hicks, if Ripley wasn't going to return. Going to the aliens' home planet, or the idea was tossed out of Alcatraz in space, and that's the one they went with.
It is.
So
really,
that was a choice.
It was.
Yeah. Which, like, you gotta make choices.
You know what? It was a good sort of juke for the series. You know, like, people were saying, like, okay, so here's escalation one, here's escalation two. This one's not quite an escalation, but it is a very different kind of film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that I would say that there's like aliens to the third power in this one, but
because there's only the one.
Only one alien, right? Yeah.
Well, the two? I don't know. It's kind of complicated.
The one that comes out.
Two and a half? Yeah. I mean, one and a half.
One and a half.
Yeah. Should be like the Lion King. Because
it's on screen for like 5 seconds.
The Lion King 2, and then they went back and did Lion King 1.5.
Exactly.
That I think would work.
Okay.
But they got Nathan Lane back, so I mean, there's that.
Yeah. We should bring Nathan Lane into this franchise.
God. Could you imagine Nathan Lane trying to just work his way through an alien plot? God, that
right. Love it. That's going to be my new mental image now.
I would love that movie, actually. That'd be a great movie. 10 out of 10. Nathan Lane putting on a show for the aliens.
There's plenty of jazz hands in this franchise, which we'll talk about anyway. The alien does so many.
He could be the alien.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my god.
Just animate it. You're welcome.
Love it.
I'm okay with this.
Also, I had to look up for those who also do not know who Nathan Lane was. He was the voice of Timon. I don't know actors' names. So I was like, which one was he?
Yes.
He was Timon.
Yep.
He's also in The Birdcage.
Yep. So many movies.
He has a good
role. Lots of musical movies too, like The Producer, where he returns with Matthew Broderick again. Anyway, we're not talking about that movie.
Again, this is just going to be
the whole sidetrack.
This is what happens when you have three people with attention deficit disorder on a podcast. I'm guessing.
I actually don't have it, but everybody else in my house does, so I get it.
Two and a half.
Yeah. Emily, you're the half. You get the osmosis portion of it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Podcast directed by David Fincher.
Yeah, David Fincher. Right. most famous for Seven. Let's see if you know any of these movies, Emily. But he's a actually really famous director. So he's Seven really is too. Kind of his breakout.
I've heard of it.
Film Fight Club, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, Gone Girl, Zodiac, oh my god, Mindhunter, the Netflix show Love, Death and Robots, and then a connection to our Star Wars half of the franchise, as we'll keep pointing out throughout this whole thing. Alien and Star Wars shared a lot of the same production teams, especially because a lot of Alien was shot in London, where A New Hope was shot. Anyway, he got his start in filmmaking when he was assistant cameraman on Return of the Jedi.
Mm. I did not know that.
Neither did I.
That's very cool.
I think I maybe have seen Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I've heard of most of the other ones, but...
Yeah, he does a lot of... Speak of true crime, his stuff has a lot of... Seven and Zodiac are very true crimey.
His films are very, gritty and noir-ish, and this kind of fits into that gritty noir tone, which is cool.
Yeah. I love it. But when he was finally brought on, the release date was just over a year away. They still had it. Did not even have a script. And they weren't changing they weren't going to change the release date because they spent so much
money. They had brand deals to deal with. Yeah. They most likely had McDonald's to deal with. They had toys coming out. They had to have a movie.
Yep. So they brought him on, and they specifically brought him on because he had not directed a feature film before. This is going to become one of the points of contention. He was mostly known at that time for working on feature films, but also doing directing commercials and music videos. So the studio kind of brought on this, wet behind the ears director, they thought, thinking that they could just kind of plow over him to create this production that he'll just bend over for whatever they want to suggest or say or do and just kind of do it. But that was
clearly how it works with directors.
David Fincher was a jobber, and he turned out to be, Stone Cold Steve Austin,
Right. He is one of the most iconic directors of the past 25 years. He is such visual style and stuff. He is so well known. It's they did not know that's who they're bringing on, you're saying. But Fincher came on. He was just really upset with the whole production. All the actors and most of the crew loved him. But the studio, the studio execs, the writers, and the producers hated him. And they kept putting pressure on the production, making it extremely stressful. They would basically call him the day before a shoot and would tell him, yes, we are going to shoot the scene, or no, we are not going to shoot the scene because we rewrote the scene, or no, we're not going to shoot the scene because it's too expensive, or stuff like wow. So every single day they were sending him different stuff. They kept doing rewrites, reshoots as they were filming. This movie never had a completed script. Even by the time they finished production, the script was not finished. So the studio was, just basically making life miserable for David Fincher. And so eventually David Fincher, here's an example of what they would do on the set. David Fincher would go into and view the dailies and then give his direction for the next day or for any reshoots and stuff like that. Dailies, for those of you who don't know, are basically the very rough cuts that they shoot the day of, which is why they're called dailies, and then they show it on a small TV, these really rough cuts of the film for the director and the crew to basically see how it's working as they're shooting. So he'd go in, view the dailies, give his direction, and then studio exec would come in about 30 minutes later and override all his decisions to the crew. It was Fincher's idea to have Ripley's character be bald. There's no reason why she's bald in the theatrical version, but we will find out in the assembly cut why she's bald. But yeah, anyway,
she has to, because they have lice.
Yes, they say it, but you don't actually see it.
There's a couple of shots of lice, but it's not
Right.
It's not
super obvious. Yeah. And so One of the reasons Sigourney signed on, though, was Sigourney Weaver, was because she wanted to do it and thought her character being bald would be really cool. And she and David kind of were vibing on the idea of who they thought Ripley would be. Sigourney says at this point in the film, Ripley is just aloof. And I think that's a great way to describe her character. Mm-hmm. And she liked that the previous versions where she was saying she wasn't going to sign on, a lot of those were making her like super aggressive or super tough, kind of like action hero-y, kind of continuing the vibe of the second movie. And she just wasn't about that and didn't think it was true to her character. So I agree with her. I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah. So then production in London, the movie was so over budget, the production in London, they just said at some point they weren't even finished. They're just like, we're closing down production. It's done. So without finishing the film and there's without a finished script, they just stopped production and they paid people to come in and do a rough edit to find out what was missing. They found out what was missing. Fincher was involved for some of the reshoots, but then left by the end. He was just so sick of it. And so some of the reshoots at the end were done by the second line directors and crew and stuff like that in LA, not in London with the original crew. Fincher has since disowned the film, saying he hated the final product. For the 10th anniversary of the film, Fox asked Fincher if he would do a director's cut. He said no. So instead, they did an assembly cut, which is basically based off of his editing notes and earlier cuts of the film. We're going to cover this one in 2 weeks, but the original cut of the film was over 3 hours long. The assembly cut is 2.5 hours, and the theatrical cut is just under 2 hours. So just the differences in like what was kept and what was cut and stuff and what we have available to us.
It's a lot of movie.
H.R. Giger was brought back for the character designs, but only one of his character designs was moved, which is the Bambi Burster scene, is basically the four-legged alien shortly after it was born. The rest of his designs were considered too expensive and they did not have enough time to make, so they didn't use any of them. And so ever since then, until he died, Giger had a major riff with the studio and Fox, and Giger has also disowned the movie and says, with, wow. And because of that. And then the last kind of little bit of behind the scenes is that the actor who's playing Alien was just a stunt person. And Sigourney Weaver and him were talking about it, and she basically told him to treat the alien as if it's a character in itself. And so one of the things that this movie is praised for is just like how the alien seems to have more, when it is shown on screen, seems to have more depth to it than, especially in the last movie, Alien.
Yeah, this one has a personality.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of that, too, is just the nature of it is not killing everyone. And so there are moments where it's not just creepy, surprising, mm-hmm. attacking, creeping, surprising, attacking.
So, yeah. For our one sentence summary, do you have one, Emily?
Okay, first, for clarity, the movie that we watched for this was the theatrical release.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay, just making sure.
Yes.
No, we all watched the same one, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know, otherwise that'd be a different conversation.
Yeah, sure.
My one-sentence summary is, science wins against the alien.
I like it.
Because they did use science against the alien. Chemistry for the win. I was like, oh yeah, that's actually smart. When I saw that, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a weird movie where science doesn't usually make sense. That one does. That one scans.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I have a one sentence summary other than space is terrible. And everything sucks, man.
I like it. That's a great one. Mine is an ongoing joke for the season, but so mine already doubting. Okay, anyway, mine is slasher in space prisons.
Okay, that works. I thought you were going to somehow try to incorporate the number three into the words slasher and space, and I was going to be like, base.
So it's like, are we going to do another cube pun, or do we need to save that for the cube, cube two, hypercube, cube zero watches?
Oh my gosh! I think you're the only person I've ever met who has also seen all of those movies.
I've seen the first. I have not seen the other two, but they're on my list of watch.
But at least you know of them.
I do know of Cube, Hypercube, and Cube Zero.
They are not good.
Only the first one is good. They're real terrible. Really weird, experimental Canadian horror.
I want to do a season on that one day. We'll maybe. We'll see. So I guess we can roll through this movie. You want to start us off, Emily?
Sure.
This. Go for it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I love that the extra alien got in, and I was so confused about the whole thing because somehow I was just a little confused throughout, I think, the entire movie. I mean, when you said it was shot by somebody who mostly directed commercials, I was like, oh, yeah, it's like a series of commercials. Okay, I could see that. And then throw in, you know, the production and all of that stuff. But the extra alien I was really confused by because I was like, okay, but then she's alive. And she's not immediately chest bursting. But then there's the alien. So I don't know. I don't understand quite how the alien impregnates two, because I thought that they could only do one.
So, no, the alien impregnated one. This is one of the messed up parts that production got in the way of. So basically what happens is Michael Bane's character has a chest burster inside him, but he does not know that. And nobody else knows that. While they're in hypersleep, the chest burster comes out.
The Hicks guy?
Yes.
Okay.
Hicks. Sorry. The chest burster comes out of Hicks and turns into an alien and then lays the alien egg chest burster thing into Ripley while she's in hypersleep with the Mother Queen. And then when they crash, Michael Bane's character is already dead from the chest burster. And that's also why Newt does not have any signs of an alien involved with her, but she died by drowning. And that some of that's more clear in the assembly cut, but even that's not super clear, in part because Michael Bane, with that toxic 80s masculinity, refused to let them use his likeness if he was going to have a chest burster scene.
Seems a weird choice, but okay.
Because he thought that his character
was too macho.
Isn't of the hero.
Whole point of the movie, like the first two movies, like, no, you are not too macho to be destroyed by the space bug.
He apparently missed that memo. And how so did he you... was like dead set against it. And so
I
they had
Hicks.
To.
Well, that's rude.
Well, that's yes. And so.
In the 80s,
but,
weird,
this
man.
Is also after. But this is also after Terminator. So, like, this Terminator and Alien, he thought he was the next leading action hero. He didn't want to have no gay alien, phallic alien thing coming out of him and stuff and penetrating him.
So. Well, we sure showed him. I don't even know what else he's been in since then.
Not much.
Not a whole lot. Sounds like he was hard to work with and a bad actor to handle. Yep. So, you know, fair play. Oh well. But yeah, the theatrical cut that we watched does not make it clear, because the intro is you are in space, you're watching space happen, and then you see quick half-second cuts of action. And you don't know what's happening because they're all very, very quick. And you're like, wait, what? What are they dead? Are they alive? What's happening? Mm-hmm. It doesn't
that
make sense.
One of the places that they didn't end up filming, so they had to try to put something in post-production to fit there. And that's why we get that. Isn't Hollywood great? Isn't Fox great?
Showbiz.
I mean, that's a word. Also, when we saw the pupper, I was like, ah, the pupper. Is the dog the new Jonesy? And then Newt was the next Jonesy. The dog, does die. You don't even need to does the dog die for this one. The dog does die. It's bad.
Yeah.
It's a bad sign. Bad sign.
Bad.
Yeah. And then, Emily. Emily and I watched this together, and Emily asked if Newt died while we were watching it. And I was like, I can't answer that. I'm like, I'm just going to ignore that they asked that question.
They ignored it.
Newt died on her way back to her home planet.
Right.
She got poochied.
She didn't have any love numbers.
And she didn't even die from aliens. She died from drowning when the ship crashed into the ocean.
That's a merciful, I think. Like, they were trying to be merciful, but, like, she did have to die. Could you imagine a version of this movie with a 12-year-old? She was terrified, yeah.
Yeah, but also remember, this movie came out in 1992. They would have either had to recast Newt or suddenly somehow explain how Newt aged 6 years in the last... While she was in hyperstasis sleep.
Where she's not supposed to age at all. You know, like you do.
Yep.
I was not on track with any of my predictions this time because I also was like, wait, is that Dr. Robot? Because you got to find the robot.
The AI, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know that we did.
There was no robot in this film.
Nope. Except maybe the end.
But... I think, what's his face?
Bishop 2. Mm-hmm. You think Bishop 2, the...
I think Bishop Electric 2 Boogaloo? Was actually a robot. Yeah. Because when they, like, hit...
His ear was hanging off. It was kind of flopping about.
There was a patch of skin, and there was not blood pouring out at all.
And there's plenty of blood in this movie for them to have shown blood if it was meant to be there, so... Mm-hmm. I think you're on to something, Emily. I never caught that before you said that.
That is a good point.
Yeah.
So... Oh, poor Bishop.
Yep, and the if it's sticky, there's an alien.
Yep,
it's still holding true.
For sure. Uh-huh. We also have Jazz Hands alien again. Every time the alien appears, like the first time we see a full frontal, that sounds wrong, but a full frontal of the very phallic alien, it always does Jazz Hands. I love it. And the
xenomorphs were just built for Broadway, baby.
They were.
Put those in a cabaret.
Maybe that's the next musical.
Right?
Can you imagine Alien
thoroughly
musical?
Modern Zeno Millie.
Liza Minnelli with the Zeno Millie? Lizino Minnelli?
Sorry.
I just died.
Uh-huh.
That was fantastic. I'm here for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what else in your rememberings of it, in your notes, the eye effect for Bishop? Yeah, that was creepy, huh?
It was so creepy.
I miss practical effects.
And so gross.
I don't know if this is a practical effects are just like so charming in some ways,
right? And believe it or not, no CGI alien in there. It was stop motion and then thrown into the film. It doesn't look good, but still,
I was like, why is it green? Why was it green?
But it's still a lot better than what 1992 CGI could have done. Could you imagine if that had been 1992 CGI?
We know what it looked like. It was Lawnmower Man, and that was bad.
Yes, it was. Oh, another movie. I kind of secretly loved that, even though it was awful. It was trash.
It's so cheesy. Love it.
Mm-hmm. I also was not totally clear on the, like, how they trap it and then it can't get out and then no fucking way. It didn't work.
Yeah. Everything
I was suspicious and then it didn't work. Yeah.
There's so much I can't wait for the assembly cut to watch because there's just so much in there. So this is your teaser, y'all. You need to come back and listen to our episode on the assembly cut in 2 weeks. But One scene I love in this, so suspenseful, is the scanning scene when Ripley knows there's something wrong with her. Yes. And suspects she might have internal bleeding, but it's kind of setting us up all along to say, no, it's going to be something else, isn't it? And then it's an alien, and not just any alien. She is impregnated,
I with guess? A queen. With,
yeah, an alien queen.
How does she? I don't understand that part.
I think it's a head shape
thing.
How do
we know that?
Yeah. And also much more bony. The queen's exoskeleton is very, like, rigid.
The way you said this was just like...
yeah. Bony.
Yeah. Like the crypt keeper.
Why does it take so long?
Like you were
so
really chewing on that one.
Yeah. But why does it take so long?
Well, that's the question. Was it because she was in stasis, so that slowed the alien from maturing more quickly? Was it because it's the queen, so queen just gestates longer? It doesn't make it clear, but it kind of, but I think either of those could be reasons.
The real reason is because they couldn't have it happen until the very end of the movie.
Exactly.
I mean, yes. Yes, yes.
Yes, but
and
no.
Also,
everybody else, like, within
also,
2 hours, that thing's out of ya.
The real reason is Ripley is just so badass. Unlike John Hurt's character, like, he's...
Oh, man.
He couldn't even
died in his Cheerios, man.
Yep. Right?
Rip John Hurt.
So.
And then he got it again in Spaceballs, so, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I did like that I called the Never Trust the Company.
I mean,
I feel pretty solid about that
one. It had been saying never trust the company since the first movie, though. Mm-hmm. And it's the same company each movie. So I feel like one hasn't caught on by now.
I just got to
even Yutani is not to be trusted.
Yep.
Do
also,
not
I'm
trust
confused about why they didn't even attempt to extract the thing. The whole thing. It was just so confusing. There's just a lot of confusion.
There's also a novelization of this, which I'm tempted to read just because I cannot imagine that would be any more coherent. I kind of want to see what the author... I think it might be Alan Dean Foster who wrote the novelization. I know he did the first one. But anyway, I'm curious.
Yeah.
Anything else? Or are we ready to get into a deep dive?
I think we're ready to dive.
Yay. Who wants to start us off?
What the heck is double Y chromosome work?
That's not how chromosomes work.
Yeah.
What? It's XY or XX, not YY. YY
and
is
if
a
nothing
birth
else,
defect and doesn't
the y
work.
Y is going to, like, fall off.
Yeah, because it's just a little thing. A Y
and
chromosome is just a little.
It's eroding away.
Yeah.
It's teeny tiny.
I love it.
The scriptwriter skipped that day in seventh grade when they talked about that.
I mean, for real.
Most likely.
Like, maybe they could say it's XYY. Because there are chromosomal. But even that doesn't work for... Yeah.
No, it just doesn't work. And why would they make a prison like that? Why would they make, like, it based on chromosomes? Like, that's just... I mean, again,
weird.
80s choices, man. Like, why? What are you doing?
Although,
well,
like,
maybe what is you spoken?
Although the, like, Hicks actor not being willing to
get penetrated by an alien,
right? And the fact that they are portraying the, like, super hyper masculine people as the most deadly.
Yes.
Because they have done the most deadly, heinous, horrendous crimes.
The worst of the worst, like, supposedly.
Yeah, and then we have the guy who's like, "Oh no, I can't get penetrated by an alien. I can't give birth to an alien."
Right, and not even him, just his likeness. It would have been a model. He, like, a plastic model, and he still was
a,
like,
dummy.
Nope.
Yeah.
So
spoilers,
I mean,
he was the dummy.
That's one reason to not sign away your likeness.
So, okay, go ahead.
No, go, please, first. Go for it.
So I have a crackpot theory that I want to share with you guys. I put it in the notes.
I love cracked pots.
I don't think Dylan... I think Dylan may have been falsely convicted. Because, you know, he says to Ripley to scare the shit out of her, says, I'm a killer and a rapist of women. And, like, throughout the film, you are shown that he doesn't kill anybody. He defends Ripley. He acts heroically. He even, like, he makes a big show saying, I'll kill you after we kill the alien. But then, like, he heroically sacrifices himself instead of killing her. I don't think he was ever going to kill her, and I don't think he actually is a killer. I think he was falsely convicted.
I was going to say, statistically speaking, it's highly likely.
Yeah.
Very likely.
Two black men.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very good chance that both of them were wrongly convicted, in fact. Yeah.
Quite possible.
I was captivated by his glasses.
His glasses are very good. Very strong glasses game on that guy.
They're very Malcolm X, though.
And I love...
When we were watching this, friend of the podcast, Susanna, and Pace and I were all watching it together. And Susanna... I think it was Susanna. Maybe it was Pace. I don't know. One of you two were like, that's totally intentional that it's Malcolm X glasses. Mm-hmm. That, like, his character is... And I think that's an interesting space, like, with Malcolm X, who, yes, also went to prison... also was portrayed in various ways as violent, as inciting violence, that sort of a thing, and yet was very much about protection. So, like, the dynamics of the way this character, like, really is channeling, like, a Malcolm X-ish character.
Mm-hmm.
He was deeply religious, but he was Muslim. And I feel like they are kind of combining the Christianity and not even like it's very like surface level Christianity and biblical literalism and stuff like that. We'll get into that. But like with like kind of coding the character at that kind of vibes. And so it's like it's a little bit of amalgamation of Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X in a way. It's kind of weird. I'm not sure it's really done well, but the actors are fantastic, but clearly these are white director and white writer, not really doing it.
Charles Dutton, to his credit, he carries a lot of this movie along with Sigourney Weaver.
He does.
Yeah.
And that's kind of another rug being pulled out from you is that you think it's going to be the doctor who makes it to the end, but it's not.
Oh, yeah.
With Ripley.
That was surprising. You know, they've been playing this guy to be up the main character. Nope. He gets got halfway through.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Goodbye to one of the Lannisters. Starts with a T. Can't remember his name. Tyrone? Yeah.
Tyrone, I think. Yeah. Yeah. The patriarch of the family. T-Boon. I love it. We are going to do a boot tube on Game of Thrones one of these days. But we're not ready for that yet. There's so much to unpack in that show.
Side note, I just noticed, because I, thanks to May's prompting before we started recording, have the IMDb up too. And three of the characters... One of the names is the same as their actual name. So Peter Guinness plays Peter Greger, Clive Mantle plays Clive William, and Pete Postlethwaite plays David Postlethwaite.
That is very likely because they were writing the script as they were filming. And so for ease, they're like, we can't remember a new character. We'll just call him the actor's name to keep him.
Whatever you are, Clive, go here. You know, get your mark.
I love that.
And then you just make up a last name once it's in production.
Thanks for... That I mean, that's awesome.
That is a fun fact. I like that fact.
Yeah.
I also want to talk about how nihilistic this film is.
Oh yeah. Nothing means anything.
Right? And so like just the very beginning of killing off the last movie ends so beautifully, and we know this is gonna be a trilogy. You think there's gonna be a happy ending. And welcome back to talking about how everything is awful.
Everything
is meaningless. Nothing.
I mean, very like very Koholet, very Ecclesiastes, just message. But like, mm-hmm. how when this movie just begins by saying we're going to destroy all the characters you fell in love with in the last movie except for Ripley, and Ripley is going to be like so, like, over it and in trauma and stuff.
That she is a hollow shell, like, of the person she used to be.
Right, exactly. And so it's like this movie is just like, ah, so like, yeah. And then Lemon Bishop says, "I'd rather be nothing." Like, mm-hmm. literally saying kind of the theme of the film. Everybody in this movie dies except for one inmate. Mm-hmm. And then even Ripley's sacrificial death, and we'll talk about messianic tropes there in a minute. And like, in spite of the best efforts, nothing changes. Nothing gets better. This movie just sucks.
It's a downward spiral. You know what? It's the downward spiral, Nine Inch Nails all the way down.
Right?
By the end, you're singing, I hurt myself today.
Right? Right? And I love that this movie does that, though. Like, I'm surprised Fox let them do this, given all the shit they were doing in the production.
It was a big swing. And I think for Fincher, it makes a lot of sense. But the whole series, and this is me coming at it from my perspective, the whole series is a play on cosmic horror, in that it's not necessarily a big alien god sitting at the bottom of the ocean. It is a human-sized alien thing that does nothing but kill. And we don't know why. We don't know where it came from, why it's supposed to exist. And so it seems to build nests. Okay, cool. And then you put it in a prison, and it's just doing the same thing. And it just doesn't stop, and there's no sense to it. And so it plays with this cosmic horror of, is there any sense or meaning to the universe? Versus these guys in a fundamentalist, first of all, okay, so premillennial dispensationalism still existing in the far future, that's a downer too, man.
Right?
That's a downer.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, they actually say, like, premillennial dispensationalist, fundamentalist, like, oh no. Oh, babies, what is you doing? The worst version.
It's so bad.
Yeah, we were talking, Pace and I were talking in the second, in when we were talking about aliens, that we hadn't talked about alien, or we hadn't really talked about religion in the first movie, so we talked about it last movie, and then we got to this one, and I was like, well, we should have just waited for this one, because wow, the religion is not at all subtle here.
Nope. Why would we wait when our podcast is Horror Nerds at Church?
Details, details.
But yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it supposedly juxtaposes in a sort of flimsy way. We have these people who believe in something and they have dedicated themselves to a lifestyle on this planet. Doesn't make a lot of sense, but they do it. Versus cosmic horror alien death beast, which in mm-hmm. the production notes they call it the space beast, which is a hell of a word. Kind of love it,
right?
You know, we know them as xenomorphs now, 30 years in the future, but space, there's this space yeah. beast that has no mind except to kill. And so you have this supposed juxtaposition of order versus chaos, and it kind of plays with it, but then it kind of forgets about the religious angle by the halfway mark of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, except for the one guy who lives,
yeah,
who's like, I was promised I was going to live.
Mm-hmm.
And he does.
And he does. Kudos to that guy. What was his name? Morse? Yeah, Morse. Good for Morse.
Yeah, but it's kind of clear that he's probably not going to live long, because they say that they're not going to let anyone survive from this. And so there's also kind of the element of religion. Like, if you take the commentary of this film as extending to the religious metaphor as well, and the nihilism of that, then it feels very much like this saying religion is a coping mechanism or a way for these men to assuage guilt for the stuff they've done, but like an opiate for the masses, but it's no actual salvific function. And then Ripley has this messianic death and saves everybody. And so
she literally does the crucifixion pose as she falls into the foundry.
Well, and she tries to do the crucifixion Jesus beat me up pose, the beat Jesus up pose, when she's trying to get Malcolm X to kill her the first time.
True.
She's like, okay. And she like stretches out her arms on the cell.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then
she just bites the big one. As she's wrestling an alien midair.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What was the purpose of that?
That is a scene that literally everyone in the production, I was watching behind the scenes to help me prepare for this, and like literally every person in the production they were interviewing was like, yeah, that ending is not what we hoped it would be, but we just literally had like no money left at that point, so but they all know it's like, that's not good.
That's not a good take, but you know what,
it's just like, it's the only take they had.
We ran out of film. We can't buy more from Kodak. We're done.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just a dark, sad film.
Mm-hmm.
Very dark. Mm-hmm.
Except for when the iron's hot. Then it's very bright.
True. Mm. True.
Very true.
Mm-hmm. I love fire. Also, P.S.
Good to know. Glad to know. Note to self, keep fire away from Emily. They might burn my house down.
I worked at camp for a few summers. I know how to build a fire and keep it from burning houses down. Don't worry, you're safe. Even in California.
As even with that like devilish look they're giving, I feel very safe right now, Emily, from your fire.
I'm in Baltimore. Y'all are on other time zones, other coasts. You're fine. You're fine. Totally fine.
I don't know. You could hack the internet somehow and start fires.
And also, Bay Area, California is notoriously under fire issues.
It's a tinderbox.
It's true, but not from me. From everyone I'll take your word on for the it. Planet
You
together.
Seem trustworthy.
From PG,
I'm a pastor.
Mostly.
You can trust me.
No, when pastors say that, like, we need to do an actual PSA. Beware of pastors that say that.
Do
in
not,
real life.
Do no, not trust actually, that.
I don't actually say that in real life. Only when you can see my voice. Face and voice. Joking.
I can see your voice and hear your face. Very good. Yes.
That's usually how it is.
So, man. So going back to the religious stuff is like, okay, so they took a vow of celibacy, which is not a thing in premillennial dispensationalism. They're actually very much all about making as many babies as possible. So that one's...
Except, is it a way of being homophobic without saying it? Because if they have a vow of celibacy and they're only around men, why would they need to do that?
Mm-hmm. That is a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Very good point.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. And then, introduce someone who is not a man.
But who is still very butch. And clearly not into men.
She just gets gayer. She's gotten gayer every single, or queerer every single movie.
Agreed. We're watching.
And David Fincher is all about it. David's really into it. He's like, yeah, we're going to shave your head. We're going to put you in a tank top. You get to run around a prison. You're going to be blowing stuff up.
Like,
it's going to be great.
Yeah, okay. Let's do it. That's right? What gets her.
She's very much degendered by a lot of choices in this movie. Which is interesting, I think. Because, again, juxtaposed to this very butch group of guys who are supposedly the worst of the worst and hyper masculine, and then you said like, oh, but she's a woman, but she doesn't really do anything feminine at all in the movie aside from seducing Dr. Lannister.
And the doctor's the one that
Mm-hmm. Fun little role reversals there. We love to see it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Indeed.
But then I just think again about Charles Dutton's "I'm a killer and rapist of women." The way he says it is just like, "All right, bud." Thought we were gonna, you know, like, okay. "Hi, I'm here for lunch," and he's just like, "I'm gonna scare the pants off you. Don't get too friendly."
Right.
And I'm simultaneously the religious leader of this group.
Yeah. He's the immortal core of the prison. Great job, buddy. You are the moral center of the film.
Delightful
film. It's a fun time for everybody. Yep. Bring the family, bring the folks. Buy the toys. They're all in KB Toys. God, I remember all the toys for this thing. Do you remember seeing all those toys growing up at the KB Toys? God, they were a million of them. Every kind of variation of alien you can imagine was in those toy stores. And I'm like, that is not a movie for children. Why are there so many toys? Like RoboCop, lots of toys, not a movie for kids.
Terminator?
Right? Spawn? Oh my gosh.
Honestly, I don't think Star Wars is a movie for like little kids, but there's
it's definitely in like the 12 to 13. Now. Yeah.
Yeah, but I definitely have purchased baby books of like Daddy Darth.
Yeah. Past guests of the podcast. Aw, yeah. Past guests of the podcast, Rich and I have actually talked about that because Rich is a dad and he's like, "When should I start introducing my kid to Star Wars, this thing I love?" It's like, and really interested in it. And so like we were talking about like the new show, like Disney now this become Disney-fied. Disney is like,
it has totally become a lot more
young Jedi. Yeah. That Young Jedi TV show is like made for kids, is like a legit made for kids movies.
Yeah.
A TV show for like the preschool range, and it's like still Star Wars branded. I'm like, I love that Disney is, for all the shit that Disney rightfully gets, I still love that Disney at least knows how to make age appropriate stuff of all their franchises that they're trying to put out there. And then, but they do it as a marketing thing for sure. The younger you can get the kid hooked on it, then you have like someone buying your shit for life. But still, it's absolutely, like they know how to package it for each age group in very creative and smart ways. And I do like that.
For sure. I will plug and say that I do love Rebels with all my heart, but good Lord, that thing is chock-a-block full of war crimes, and you love to see it.
Right?
Chopper has killed and will kill again.
For sure. You should definitely check out our listeners. You should all definitely check our Patreon episode on Rebels. It was fun.
Yeah. Is that out now?
Yeah, that was the first one that came out.
Oh, yeah.
So that came out in January. It's been out.
War Crimes for Kids. You'll love to see it.
Indeed. Right? Well, let's just casually kill stormtroopers and then not bring it up at all. Like, no feelings from that. No remorse. I just full on kill people. I'm a kid and I'm okay with it.
I feel like we talked about this before, that like this is, because I compared it to Ember in the Ashes by Saba Tahir, which is a book series, which also has lots of child soldiers. But comes from a context of cultures that have actually in real life experienced their own kids being forced into being child soldiers, and like it's part of like the cultural history and context, and so portrays it very differently than the like, yeah, we're just going to steal your kid when they're about 1 year old and keep them forever, and you know, it's fine, they don't have to be connected to their culture at all,
we're the good guys.
Right, like it's just so unquestioning of the Jedi, and yet anyway, aliens, am I right?
Right, not for kids.
Not for kids.
That's
not
for how kids. We got there. I would love to see Disney's take, now that Disney owns Fox, Disney's take on trying to market
make
this
an
for
aliens
kids.
Movie
we'll see.
They're going to let that thing rot in the dustbin and put it on Hulu or something. I mean, that's what they're doing with Predator. But to be fair, Prey was really good. So
it was.
Prey was. We did the movie commentaries. We did like a whole marathon. Yeah. We did the movie commentaries for the Predator series for our Patreons, and Prey was the final.
Prey is so good.
That won't be out until like May for Patreon supporters. But the other ones are out. Are coming out monthly.
It's... Predator 2 should, in theory, have released today that we are recording this, but we'll probably release tomorrow.
All right. Oh. What else we got here?
I don't know how time works.
Yeah. Time isn't real. Don't worry about it.
Right?
It's true. It's true. The body horror.
Yeah.
The body horror.
I love the body horror in this. And, like, David Fincher, famous for being among the first Hollywood people to really try to make blood look like real blood, for better or worse, and movies since then.
This is a wet film. This is a very moist film. So, since then,
movies have changed the color of blood. Now blood is much darker, and this movie is part of that. It used to be much brighter in films.
Interesting.
So this movie is part of that. And so much body horror here. So much... and we all know Pace loves body horror. Emily, not so much.
It's true. This wasn't as bad. The body horror where I realized, the movie where I realized I was not so into body horror is the one, is the Nightmare on Elm Street one, where Freddy's like tongue is like.
Part two.
Yeah, part two. That was, I'm not a big body horror. That's not my horror jam. But this one was fine. Apparently slashers is fine. Just don't like make your tongue weird. I don't know.
Yeah.
No wet Muppets for you, huh?
Oh, we should Muppet this movie. No, I'm kidding.
Oh my god, could you imagine the Muppets Alien 3?
Okay.
It's a segment on Nerds at Church.
Nerds at Church has a segment called Muppets Moments, where we used to cast Bible stories as Muppets musicals, but now we just
That's wonderful.
Questions about Muppets based on the topic.
Sure.
For the episode. But yeah, so when you're like wet Muppets, I was like, it reminds me of that one superhero show. Susanna made me watch it. The one where they're like superheroes because their parents poisoned them or something.
And they go Runaways? To like
superhero school.
Sky High?
But one of the characters. No, it's like horror. It's a horror one. I don't remember, but one of the kids, like, they have messed with his brain so much that sometimes, like, his, like, mental image is Muppets. And so he does this whole massacre of people, and for him, it's just, like, tearing Muppets apart. Tearing Muppets' arms off.
I
kind of love
that. I kind of need to see this show. If you can remember what the name of it is, I'll check it out. That sounds dope.
Right?
Because it wasn't the Umbrella Academy. They don't have any Muppet related.
No, it was a spinoff, I think, of another show. But I don't know. I just asked. So I don't know if she'll see it. But
sure. Yeah. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Lots of good puppets in this one, though. Yeah. Love seeing the good puppets. We're wet puppets.
Even if the puppets are not put into the film, into the shot well when they are superimposed with green screen, they still look really cool in and of themselves.
The movements is really cool. I like some of them. Some of them are weird because one was like air humping the thing while he was eating it. That was awkward. I didn't know what was going on with that one.
Because it was born out of a dog, Xenomorph gets some of the characteristics of a dog. So it seems there's one shot where it looks as if the alien is like dog humping.
Like the hips are gyrating in a very suggestive way.
Also while simultaneously eating the person.
I think I missed that. I'm not sad that I missed that.
Nope. You didn't miss it. You're
not
good.
Not at all. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird shot.
Gen V, the spinoff of The Boys.
Gen V! Oh, I've heard of that. Okay, yeah. I watched like two episodes of The Boys and I was like, I'm good.
Yeah.
I didn't watch any of The Boys. I just watched Gen V. Gen V, I think, was probably better than The Boys. I don't know. I didn't watch The Boys, so I don't really know. But I did think the, like, I did not anticipate the, like, kill me zombie dilemma coming into play in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
It did. Where she's like, you have to kill me before I totally turn. You have to kill me before it totally bursts. And, but, like, that is just, I mean, it's a trope for a reason, but.
Sure.
And also, like, how does she know that would even work?
Right? Or would it just, like,
continue to gestate? We don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. But she definitely, yeah. That was my.
Yeah. That gets into one of my things. I have two more things. I know you have some more too, May. But the one thing I have is the return of motherhood as a theme. We saw that in the second one and now in this one. But now she's literally the mother of an alien, whereas the first one she was the adoptive mother of Newt. And
she's now lost two children.
Yeah, but also this is different from most anti-choice messages, because the nihilism here also has this clear theme of a mother wanting to literally destroy what is in her and then ultimately being successful, though at cost of her life, which is why abortion should have wider access, because it saves lives, y'all.
Yes, abortion should be free and safe.
Cosign.
So. And then the last thing I have is just about Ripley, which is if this was originally meant to be a trilogy, this is meant to be the final movie of the trilogy, and so we get these kind of three different versions of Ripley. We have her, or to you, era in the Taylor Swift lingo of today, three eras of Ripley. So we have the novice coming of age in the first one. Then we have this infantry woman, like captain character.
Seasoned warrior sort of thing.
Yeah. And then this one is kind of this, in a sense, elder reflecting on the past. And we get that in that one line where she says, "I know you're all I can remember from my life, or no, all that I remember is this conflict," whatever. But also,
you wrote it down. You've been in my life so long, I can't remember anything else.
Yeah, that quote. And then, thank you. And then also,
God, that's just so sad. That's such a sad thing to say.
Yeah.
Like, but, like, technically true, but also, because at this point, she's how many, like, 100 plus years old?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Technically, because she'd been in hypersleep all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so she, and also just this resignation she has. Like when she finds out the aliens in there, there's a little bit of grief when she finds it out. We see on her face, but then she just becomes determined. It's like, now it's going to end. And she kind of is at peace with that. And we,
it's like, and I kind of almost see that ending a relief too. For her, almost. Like,
yeah.
I need to die. And that's okay with me. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a resignation. Like, yeah, she's kind of relieved to be at the end of it.
Yeah, and to be clear, we're not talking about death by suicide. Like, while that is kind of what she does at the end, there's still, she feels she has a terminal diagnosis. And so when she,
well, because it has gets, been a terminal diagnosis for literally everyone who's ever.
Yes. And so she, therefore, when she accepts that, kind of accepts that as her fate. And we're not talking about death by suicide or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all I have. What else do you got? I know you have something really cool about the carceral system and
other things. Yeah, so please. So there's a couple of things that I really wanted to focus on this just a little, because it is set in a prison of people who have chosen to stay in prison. The prison was shut down, but these 25 yahoos decided to stay in the prison because they believe that this is some kind of resolution for them, that this is some kind of expiation for their crimes, even though the place is supposed to be shut down. And
yeah.
I mean, and you see this most clearly in Dr. Lannister, whatever his name was. Callister? Whatever.
Clemens?
The doctor. Clemens, yes. You see
the
it in
doctor!
Him, he's like,
the doctor!
The doctor. Yeah, the doctor, who was a really cool character. You see, because he truly was grieving for the fact that he committed malpractice. And that's why he's in prison, right? Mm-hmm. But then he served his term and no one would hire him, so he chooses to stay in prison as the prison doctor. And that's a really dark thing to say. This really speaks to the really mess up way that the carceral system keeps people institutionalized. These people had a chance to get off, and they didn't. This guy had a chance to do a different life. Maybe he couldn't find a job elsewhere, but maybe he could. But he chose to stay on as expiation for his guilt. At no point does anyone think of freedom for themselves. Freedom doesn't show up. Liberation doesn't show up at all in this film. The only guys who want to get off are the warden and the other guy, Aaron, who I'll get to in a minute. None of them have any desire to be free. And that's really messed up. Again, speaking to the nihilism that Pace is saying, their theology keeps them in prison.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, like, there's a piece of me, like, there's an aspect of, like, the theology as prison that you're talking about. There's an aspect of what the carceral system does to us, and there's an aspect of how fucked up does the non-prison world have to be for this to happen, both in terms of, like, their choice, but also Ripley ends up choosing to go back on a second mission, right? Like, and there's more to it for her that's, like, emotional tie-ins about mm-hmm. her husband and daughter and whatever, but she also chooses not to, like, there, and we don't get a glimpse except that this company is in charge of everything, including prison. So, like, mm-hmm. is there even a government? Is there anything except different versions of...
Yeah.
But is there anything except for different versions of enslavement to this company? Carceral enslavement, working...
Or employment enslavement, because she's a wage slave at the beginning of Alien 1. She's a space trucker. What she is, truckers in space. And then... Yeah. Seen as expendable.
The second movie, we have the military.
Mm-hmm. Just as expendable.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Just as stuck. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I like that. I was just like,
there's a lot of ways to look at it, but it is a bleak future that they paint.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
If these prisoners don't want to get off their hellhole planet, and that's just real sad.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Also, ableism is not great. The guy's...
Yeah.
Aaron, who was called 85 throughout the film because apparently his IQ is 85. And I'm like, one, IQ isn't real. That's a fake thing they made up to do racism. And two, all of the prisoners are basically saying he's an idiot. You can call someone an idiot without, you know, saying that they are mentally disabled. There's things you can... I mean, well, the word idiot is technically in there.
I was going to say, you have a great example in your notes.
Yeah.
Corporate fascist stooge. Mm-hmm. That sounds great.
He is a corporate fascist stooge. He is a company man. He's here as a warden for a prison. All of that mm-hmm. speaks to a type. You do not have to use mental disability to justify any of that.
Can I say two behind the scenes things about this that tie in, I think, really well? Is one, his character, the writers and Fox Studio insisted on making him to be low IQ, to be coded stupid and things like that. Mm-hmm. And yet David Fincher and the guy playing him kept fighting back against that and saying, no, we don't want that. And yet the studio rolled into the
forced film. It in. Yeah.
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 Like Hollywood, hey, what the hell, man? It's a bad look.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot talking about ableism, but that one really jumped out to me, especially the last half of the movie where they really lay into him and just make him. It's just, there's ways of doing that you didn't need to do.
I mean, I think there are parallels to what we do today, particularly when we talk about I mean, in some ways, both of the presidential candidates right now, but particularly the front runner for the Republicans, that like there are plenty of things to critique about him mm-hmm. and to say are terrible about him. And the number of people, particularly like in like wannabe progressive spaces, that still use weight as like their way of insulting him and like mm-hmm. saying why he's a terrible candidate for president. And it's like, I feel like this is that space, that there's a space in horror that tries to be like a progressive, like edgy mm-hmm. kind of thing. And yet.
And then they default to very tired jokes about weight or very tired jokes mm-hmm. about his hands, you know, like again, he's got mm-hmm. small hands, whatever. Who gives a shit? The fact is he's a fascist.
Yeah, right. Like he's a fascist.
Yeah, like there's ways you can approach the problem here that don't necessarily need to go into ableism mm-hmm. or ageism or, you know,
yeah,
fat phobia. There's lots of things you can mm-hmm. criticize that don't go into those very bad spaces.
Yeah.
So. And the only other note I had is that the fact that it is a prison planet kind of makes me want to do an Alex Jones impression. Because, I mean, his show did used to be called Prison Planet. So, here, folks, here's the thing. So, in space, right, we have these good blue-collar Americans. They're taken in by this company, and the company wants to kill him because they want this bug in space. And they want to bring it here so we can have the bug.
That is scarily accurate.
I mean, the whole plot is basically a prison planet bit. Yeah. So, you know, that's the only other note I had. Alex Jones bit.
I do love that this version of the future has normalizes assistive devices with the dude wearing the glasses. Mm-hmm. I mean, hey,
that's great.
Not all futures do that.
It's true. There's a lot. I think it's happening a lot more nowadays, but particularly when this came out, hardly anybody ever wore glasses because it's so complicated to wear glasses while filming and like where the light reflects and which light reflects and mm-hmm. all of that stuff. But
yeah, as all three of us have glasses, it's appreciated. It's nice.
Yeah. Also, our original like logos for the podcast had glasses on them.
Yep. Yep. Well, I guess we can get into a little bit of lore that this film introduces. One is alien changes. We learned that aliens can change characteristics based on what animal gestates it. This one is on all fours because it was gestated by a dog and also humps people while it eats them and things like that. And that's actually what this movie is what inspired the name Xenomorph, because it's literally a changing
because it's morphing creature. To the other.
Yes.
Cool, huh?
So good.
And I will say, going back, this is just a side note, I really did appreciate the camera work they did, the photography and the set design and the camera work they do. Really cool, especially like the camera where it's zooming through the corridors as if that is the alien's point of view vision. That's a really cool effect. I really appreciated that
part. That was probably the coolest part.
Also, one of the novel things that David Fincher did in this movie is he shot everything from the ground up as opposed to from the top down or straight on. And mm-hmm. so like it was the whole thing about Fox being upset about that and stuff because it was more expensive and not what people are used to and stuff. But it looks really good. Like the David Fincher clearly has his full on technique for directing. He just wasn't really given the space to fulfill his dream, I think. Yeah. Also, we learn more about how much Weyland Yutani sucks, and this apparently now has prison planets. They're still evil. They still want to basically just get Ripley so they can get this alien and commodify it and sell it and shit.
Which is gross and bad. We don't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because people, number needs to go up for some reason.
Yeah.
Line needs to go up. Even though it kills everybody.
Yep.
Yeah.
The last little note I have for new things we learn in this movie about this universe is apparently that Bishop the android was modeled after a real guy. But was the guy really real?
Was
we don't know.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, 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 dun. So. That was the wrong music, but yeah.
Is he human? Is he dancer? We will never know.
It's true. It's true. I think he was AI. And they're just,
I like it.
I mean, they have no qualms about lying, about like point blank lying to everyone about everything. So
they've done it many times before and they'll keep doing it. Even in later films, they keep that up. Especially like I'm thinking of Prometheus. Like, oh yeah, they just they just kept lying all the way through.
Yep. It's very on brand for them.
Very on brand.
On brand for the brand.
The brand is bad. You need a new brand.
Indeed, indeed.
All right, so I guess we're closing out of favorite kill. I really gotta say, I love the guy going under the fan. That was a really gory, gross. It's like, oh, agreed. And then he falls into the fan. Death by jazz hands.
Yep.
I couldn't remember if I had picked a favorite kill or not at the time. I mean, I kind of love the alien because of the science. Death by science. Like,
yeah. That's fair.
That's a great kill.
That's what I'm going with.
I love, mine is the warden getting sucked up through the ceiling. And that's just the end of that character. It's like, bye. And it's like just the shock ending of that. The close second is the doctor. I just love how shocking those both are.
That was a good one. That was a good twist.
Yeah. Out of 10 alien jazz hands, how many would you rank for this movie? I can go first while you all think. And I will say 7. It's not as good as the other ones, but still a pretty solid movie. And you can see what David Fincher was trying to do, even if he wasn't allowed to accomplish it fully.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go 7, 7.5 jazz hands. Yeah. It's pretty solid.
I just got so confused by all of it. I imagine the next one that we watch, I will have a higher rating. Simply because of being able to understand the plot a little bit more cohesively, which is not the director's fault, as we have established. But I think I'm going to have to go with a 6. Thought about going down into the 5 territory.
Very fair.
But that feels too far down.
5 is your favorite number.
I know.
Cool. Did you have any jump scares?
I did not. There was one place where I think I maybe like could have in the future. Could have in another context where I was following it better or more engrossed in the beginning. Had a jump scare, but I did not have any jump scares. I had a don't do that. Where I like
don't go in there.
I love it.
Right, like this is not going to end well. What are you doing? But no jump scares. I'm assuming neither of you had any jump scares either.
Yeah.
Nope.
I'm the only one with those.
I will. So, where can our listeners find you, very soon to be Dr. May?
All right. So, you can find me on Twitter. I hang out there. I do a lot of shitposting there at Dr._May Forrest. It was a preemptive doctor there that when I made the thing.
Love it.
Like, I'm just manifesting that, putting that into the universe.
Name it. Yeah. Name it. Yeah. Claim it.
Exactly.
Borrow your authority want to do it. Future.
I'm also on Substack. If you look for my full name, May Forrest Barnes, on Substack, you can follow me there. I write all kinds of things. I do theology. I do culture critique. I do film reviews. I'm thinking about doing video games reviews as well. Just whatever pops out of my brain and I feel like writing, I put it there.
I love it. Substack is also where our newsletter is now hosted, so you can check out our Substack too as well. All of you listeners will have that link in the show notes.
Yep.
So thank you so much, Joe. This was so fun. You are amazing.
Thanks for having me on. This is exciting. I'm really glad I got to be here.
Thanks for being on. Next week, we'll be dropping our Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace episode. For our Star Warsy Star Wars.
Woo! And Star Wars. 2 weeks from today, we will continue the Alien franchise with Alien Cubed, the Assembly Cut.
rude. I can't wait to finally understand what is going on.
Don't get your hopes up too high.
Maybe someone will explain things.
Maybe. There's half an hour of explaining to do. That's it for our show. Our theme music was by Matt May. Horror Nerds at Church releases seasonally on Thursdays. Please comment, rate, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Support us on Patreon and get access to exclusive movie commentary episodes, BooTube episodes, and more bonus content by going to patreon.com/horrornerdsatchurch. Starting at only $5 to sign up, it's cheaper than rescuing an alien fetus. Follow us on social media, Facebook and Instagram at Horror Nerds at Church, and Twitter at HNACPOD for all the latest updates about upcoming films, news, and other announcements. Until next time, cool your iron slowly or it'll shatter.
I like it.